Welcome to We Empower, the radio show that inspires you to embrace your potential, resilience, and strength. In these challenging times, we're here to help you unlock your power to overcome obstacles, pursue your dreams, and shape a brighter future. I'm Anna Martinez, your host for this empowering hour. Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of We Empower. I'm thrilled to have you all with us today. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired. Let's make today count. In today's episode, we will have a great guest here to introduce. It's Christina Ricketts. And some of you might know her. She is a leading figure in the tech and business world, known for her visionary leadership, expertise, and digital transformation, and for advocacy for diversity and innovation. As a thought leader, she has shaped the digital landscape and inspired countless professionals. But there is more to say about her. And then we have, of course, a book waiting for you, which is from Ellen DeGeneres. Seriously, I'm kidding. And the ones who know Ellen DeGeneres knows what you can expect from the book. So first, we want to start with a song selected by Christine.
In my eyes, indisposed, in disguises no one knows. Hides the face, lies the snake, in the sun, in my disgrace. Boiling heat, summer stench, neath the black, the sky looks dead. Call my name. Come wash away the rain.
Welcome, Christine, to the show here. I'm very, very happy to have you here. And I think it's a long journey we need to take now to say hello. And of course, I'm currently in India. You, I guess, you're currently in Germany, aren't you?
That's right. And yeah, thanks so much, Annabelle, for inviting me to this show. I'm really looking forward to the endeavor we have now in front of us for the next half hour.
Yes, so we are covering a word kind of, and you are also covering the word in a kind of, because when I met you the first time, it was at Euromines at a meeting where a lot of thought leaders come together, not just from Germany, but European wide, but also some even worldwide. And we discussed topics like digitization, innovation. You were the only woman on stage besides me presenting. And I think it's a fact which is often happening. Is it something which is okay for you, or is it something you want to fight against? Has there something changed? What do you think?
Well, it's totally not acceptable. So I think, well, actually today you must be already happy when you see at least one or two female speakers on a stage or on a panel. Actually, that's a thing where I really am fighting for. And I'm really glad that also with my employer, with SAP in the last years, I got the opportunity to do exactly this. But it's, for the
Right.
SAP, I'm doing it internal only. It's so for the SAP events, be it the ones with or without customers. But definitely that's something which I'm also fighting outside. And because it's so important to me, because first of all, we have the women. So there are also tech experts outside in the world. It's just,
Many.
yeah, it's just that they are not seen, and that's the issue. So, or that they even are not kind of willing to just jump on a stage. So we need to work on their confidence and their willingness also to jump on stage. So yes, it's definitely a topic.
But would you say it's just the confidence, or it's maybe also the old pattern, traditional pattern? Because if I look into, for example, Saudi Arab Emirates, I see so many great educated women on the stage, and it's super normal that they got lifted up by the men, which is here often not the case. And I mean, I'm a keynote speaker. I often hear about the discussions when the person from HR tells me, "You were my first choice." That there was a man, they decided for the man. I say, why? They say, yeah, all boys network.
Yeah, I think sometimes I think it's twofold. The one thing is really the traditions or structural things where we are just taking the same, the same guys we always did. It's sometimes, I wouldn't say even on purpose, it's sometimes it's just laziness. It's just easier. Well, I know this guy. Okay, he's the expert. Let's put him on stage. So often it's not even on purpose. But sometimes, therefore, it's hard to fight because it is like it is structural. It's a mindset thing. So we have to change that mindset. So we have to always ask the question. And I only can really put an appeal to all male outside. Please also raise your voice when you see that on a stage there are only male speakers, or you can do it as well. Sometimes it's not on purpose. And the second part of it, it's the women. So we have to encourage them. So what I experience is often that they tell me when I say, well, you're the expert, you can do this on stage. We just help you train and rehearse. They say, oh, do you really think? I'm not sure if I can do it. So it's the little push they need. And they need the exercise because if they're not totally confident, then do a training with them. And this is what I'm also doing, just rehearsing and say, just let's do it. And then I give you feedback. And then if you have rehearsed one or two times, you're perfect. And that's what, by the way, all keynote speakers are doing. I guess, Annabelle, you're doing it as well. So if you have an important speech, an important keynote, you have to practice. So there's very few people in the world that are kind of speakers by nature.
Yeah, exactly. You're absolutely right. And when if I think about my first steps, where I was more in scientific of speaking, in a way of having a lot of text on the screen and standing there trying to fill the people with content. And coming to the point where I'm nowadays, where I know that it's all about the phrases, the single words. It's about that you deliver just key messages. This is a long, long way, and of course, not everybody has to walk it. But I completely agree with you. It's so important to give, especially women, the confidence. As I mean, we talk about women and men, and that we did a lot in supporting them. But if I look, for example, in the departments for girls, and I see this petticoats and nail glue, and everything is about overall shine, but nothing is about experiencing. And if I look into the boys' department, I see a lot of workbooks to do. I see puzzles. I think materials to work with, experiment boxes. Where I think, yeah, we don't need to wonder. And especially if we don't give boys a role or a chance where they can be, besides traditional roles, where and how can we expect that they find themselves in other roles than the ones they've learned, right?
Right. And I think also we have to reflect, it's a very important point what you're making is the women know that appearance is something important, so they're working on it. But that the appearance is so important that your first sentence on stage, how you come across, that is so important, and that then the content is so really less important. And often also women think, as you said, I need to transport a lot of expertise. No, it's the first impression you need to convey. Start with a story so that people are kind of attracted, and then, well, in the end, the content is, I would not say second, but if you're positively noticed, then the rest is easy going. And but the appearance is important. And yes, long fingernails and something like that probably in the business world is not the thing you should do. You can have your fingernails painted. That's not a big thing, but you always have to see the context in which you're in. And this is what women often don't see, that this is so important, that not content is top, but the impression of you as a person is the thing they have to work on.
I like that you're pointing this out. And we see, for example, in the world, a few women, just like the Kardashians, for example, which started a bill imperium of billions of money. And of course, they started with showing their body, they showing the fingernails was just, we can say showing something like nothing. But they got successful. Is this the world? The wrong media presentation to women.
I think definitely, because I think in their world that's show business. There's glitter, and you have to also be sometimes scandalous because then you get the attraction. But if you're in the business world, you have to really see the context. And it's also okay to be yourself. So if you're not the black suit person, but rather the pink suit person, that's totally okay also in the business world. And you have to find your own brand, and that must be something, and it must fit together. So the context of the business world with your personal style, and that's something where you should, where I only can encourage women to work on. It's hard, it's not so easy, but that's important, because if you're not perceived professional, then again, the impression of you is you're not professional. You're looking like, I don't know, the Kardashians, which is good for show business, but not so good in the business world.
Exactly. I see a few big companies which are hiring women, especially young women, as a kind of professional influencer. Do you think this is a good idea? Because there's a lot pro and cons about it.
Well, it's always also the question of context. If you're working, for instance, for Deutsche Bank, which is a bank, and in a bank there's a certain context needed. There you need the black suit. So it's not okay to be in a bloomy outfit. And then you go to more the IT world, so like the software companies or even to startups. And there probably it's okay to be in a hoodie because this is the thing you have to. So if it's fitting to, let's say, the context, then it's for me totally okay because that helps also then probably especially also women to find their own or to come closer to their own brand, so to say. But that's not easy because, you know, to know what is, let's say, accepted in a big corporate, that's not so easy to understand. And therefore, if you have the right person, then I think it's totally supportive, but that could also lead into a wrong direction. So, for instance, what I saw, for instance, the last CEO of Mercedes, all of a sudden, Mr. Cechet jumped on stage with, you know, with jeans and with you know, just a blouson. And for me, that did not work out. So I thought, hey, yes, you thought you now have to kind of be in a tech industry outfit, but that's not authentic to me. So that's it needs to be seen in the right context. Then I think it can be helpful.
I completely agree with you. I heard when I was about giving a keynote at in Volkswagen after their turnaround a few months ago, and I talked with told somebody or told to a couple of friends. I said I'm going to have a keynote at Volkswagen. They said, "Ooh, a Volkswagen! Oh, I feel so sorry for you." I said, "Why?" I said, "Oh, hopefully they won't see the CEO." I said, "Why?" He's trying to be a youngster. He's trying to wear no tune shoes and be a very great, cool one and wear a blouson, as you said, no? And they said, "Oh, it's so old-fashioned. That was 3 years ago." And what has he to say? Nothing. It's the same old patterns. So I thought, that's interesting. I mean, I think 3 years ago we would have said maybe, yeah, that's cool, right? Because it's new and the clothes is a kind of a statement. But nowadays, after we made some, we made some struggles in the industry, we had some bankruptcies, we have poly crisis, the people want to see more authenticity, I think, less show.
And I think that's the thing you have to discover. Who are you and what is, you know, what is your personal style? And actually, you also have to feel well in what you're doing because that's also the impression because people see if you're, you know, if this is some fitting to you.
Exactly. Do we have some kind of rules, unwritten rules as SAP about this clothing or?
No, not at all because, well, that's the good thing in the IT industry. Everything's okay. Everything's okay. We are. No rules.
That's of course good. And for yourself, how do you feel yourself comfortable when you're up on stage? Is it something you were always like a Steve Jobs clothes?
I have my standard suits, and what I love too is having t-shirts, a nice t-shirt, you know, with a suit. So that's more or less a little bit my personal style. So and but I think the suit give me some also professional feeling for myself. So I feel different when I'm at home in my, you know, jeans and t-shirt or if I'm on stage with a t-shirt, a nice t-shirt and a suit. And that's for me also, I'm feeling different.
Interesting because I had a long time where I was always giving keynotes on heels, high heels, Louboutin, 50 centimeters. And I was always about, oh, hopefully I won't fall. And then I decided for tune shows, and it gave me a completely other feeling, much more grounded, back to earth, stronger. And the same with a suit. So, yeah, I completely agree with you, I completely feel you. So, I have plenty of questions for you and also about your way. And we go shortly for a few minutes into a commercial break, and then we see each other. So, stay tuned and we continue in a couple of minutes. Thank you.
The station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Oh, and our first after talk show, we already heard a lot about what you should wear or shouldn't wear, or what is the message after your clothes, and it's a lot, or not only clothes, but also fingernails, the hairstyle, and everything we show up with, but of course also our storytelling. We haven't talked about the song, Christine, you selected, which is Black Hole Sun from Soundgarden. And it reflects a little more this hidden pain and inner turmoil, captures complexities of human emotions and the mask we often wear to hide out our struggles. If I look at you, I mean, I see sometimes women in the business and top leader positions, which look like they show no emotions. Men's clothes, no emotions, walk through. And I mean, even if they are 40, they look like 60, no smile, get over their face. You are so different. Maybe you would like to say a few sentences about the song. You don't need, but maybe also about your journey, because you're one of the top position, one of the top leaders at SAP, one of the biggest technique companies around the world. And yeah, you are sitting here with a smile, you are relaxed, you have not an attitude like, hey boys, where's my red carpet?
Yes, I think, well, the choosing or selecting the song was the most difficult thing to prepare for. So it took me really hours because I needed to go to my Spotify playlist. So I could do a full hour just with songs that have something to do with me. And why in the end choose Black Hole Sun was more the time in which I was when this song came out. And I studied at the University of Saarland in Saarbrücken, but as well in Italy at the University in Bari. So, and nice. That was the time, that was 1991, 92. And that was the time when all these grunge rock bands came out. That was the time Nirvana came out, and that was you know, so I was in Italy and that music came, and we were young, I was young, and well, honestly, I was not up to do a lot of things at the university. I wanted to go abroad, so well, and I want to go far away. And then there was this partnership of my university with the University of Bari, so I went there, and it was a great time. And first of all, there was 91, the first time that Eastern German students could go abroad. So we had a lot of Eastern German colleagues, and it was such amazing conversations we had, because we came, we talked the same language, we had the same nationality, We came from two totally different planets. So that was so amazing for me. And then, that song came out. So I loved that song. And then I went back to Germany and I was, I had my diploma already. So I went to Italy more after I finished my diploma. So therefore, also, I was totally relaxed because there was no pressure for me. And then I started to work, and this start to professional life was also attached to this song because at that time it was also not easy to find a job, honestly. Although I had a good diploma, I talked four languages, I
Wow.
was in Italy.
Yeah.
At that time, we were many. So we are Generation Z. So there was a big competition. So we were many, and there was not so many open positions. So unemployment rate was high, and it was not easy to find a job. Even and I thought I'm a woman, I'm well educated, I have a good CV, I will find immediately a job. No, it was not. And so, and this is the song that kind of accompanied me at that time when it was really so many changes in my life. And therefore, still today, I really get, that's very emotional when I hear this song. And I also love the video. You should, unfortunately, we cannot see it on radio, but check it out on YouTube or wherever, and look to that video, which I found also very inspiring at that time, very modern. So that's that song. That's kind of in the time of my life, the 1 or 2 years where so many things happened.
And looking back to it, was it also the time which made your path, which formed your path, everything what you are today? Was there also a special experience, which made it?
Actually not, because at that time, and that's one of the things I only learned very late, I thought, and that was all my life, the thing, I'm interested in so many things. I have so many, and that's why I always say I have 1,000 ideas, so many things in my life that I could imagine. And also at that time, I remember, where shall I go? Which company shall I work for? So there was nothing which was clearly the goal for me. And that was at that time an issue for me because, and also today, a lot of people tell you have to know where you want to be in 5 years from now. If you don't know, you will never make a career. So I was thinking, I have no clue where I want to be. Or let's put it the other way around. There's a lot of things I can imagine this, I can imagine that, I can imagine this other one as well, that all would be totally fine for me. I would love these jobs. And I thought, therefore, I will never make a career because I don't know. And today I learned, that's just my personality. And that's also, and this is also a message I want to convey. Folks, you can do a very good career even if you don't know where you want to be in 3 years from now, because then you're open. You're open to new things that come around across the corner. And then you immediately will see or feel if this is something which you're interested in. We're in an agile world, and we also was at that time in an agile world where we should stress more that we need these kind of personalities. So we need people who know exactly, I want to become a doctor or a pilot, but we at the same time need the people like me saying, I can imagine a thousand things to do.
And I mean, in your role, you need to know about these thousand things in any way, right? Because you're at the top, so you should have a clue about what the people are doing in several special fields. How do you try to get the contact to the ground to the people, let's say, under you? I mean, I know SAP is quite flat, but I mean, SAP is huge. So how do you try to get the people, to feel the people?
I think that's pretty easy. As you say, although we have a deep hierarchy that we need because we're 100,000 plus people, but at the same time, it is not that this is, like in other companies. So you can send a mail to our CEO. That's no problem. So that's and nobody will, you don't have consequences.
That's
Because this is the openness we have. And also our CEO, you can see him eating in the canteen. Not every day. Well, obviously, with this calendar, that's not possible. But you can see, and that's also the thing what we do, and it's a tradition at SAP, which in the 90s was very strange. We have this tradition of coffee corners. So in all our buildings, all over the places, there are coffee corners. There's free coffee, free tea, and that was also when I joined. And that was, you went there and you talked to colleagues. You just met in the coffee corner. Either you didn't find a meeting room, then you went to the coffee corner to discuss something, but sometimes you just met people over a coffee. And in the 90s, people told, well, this is not efficient. Wow, people have to work, but they don't work if you're drinking coffee. So they can go every time, all day, sit in the coffee corner. Yes. And that's something which a lot of people couldn't imagine, but actually we worked in that coffee corner. Yes, sometimes you talk about private things, but mainly you talk about business. You talk about what you're currently doing, or you're meeting somebody for a special topic in the coffee corner. And this tradition, I think, is something which is really making this company special. And this is also helping all levels of people to stay connected to each other. So you bump into people, coincidentally, also in this in these coffee corners or in the canteens, and there's the way where you just, you have all people go there. All level of managers go to the canteen or go to coffee corners, and therefore there, that's the nature to stay connected, because there also you have talks to people you probably know for 30 years. And therefore, I think that's the thing everybody does at SAP, not only me, to go just to do this. And therefore, we are connected. We are a networking company.
Great. And I mean, you are sitting in Waldorf. Waldorf is the
Correct.
center, worldwide center of SAP. I think some people don't know where it's located. It is a very small area close to Stuttgart. Maybe this is also good because you are then at one place where there's no other shopping centers, restaurant close by, and so on, right?
Yeah, that's right. But the same is true when you go now to Berlin, where we have opened just a very new big office close to the main station. But we also have a new office in Munich with all more than 1,000 employees there. But there's the same thing. And even if you go to Munich, we have an open space there where everybody can go. So there's a cafeteria where also, people from all over the place can go. It's not closed, because I think innovation is done through these unplanned things that are happening, that you talk to people, that you have an idea or you have a current task, and all of a sudden you jump into or you bump into somebody, be it a colleague or be it, I don't know, your neighbor, be it a random person, and you just tell this person, and then this person has a different idea or a different perspective. And through this conversation, this helps you to probably evolve your idea, or probably also pull it away. But I deeply believe that these interactions on a random basis, not planned, really make innovation.
Right, sounds really ideal because it's exactly what you are saying. It's the unplanned, it's the sometimes very small, very quiet, very small signs you get using them, getting in contact with people you've never known, you've never met. It sounds great. And you described, I mean, of course, you have a lot of subsidiaries. Are you traveling a lot?
Actually not. So I was, but as a company, we've always been a global company. And in a global company, we early started to work virtually, because you cannot. We have so many people in the US, in India, all over the place. You cannot travel there. That's not efficient. So we very early started to work virtual. Also in global teams, so that's what we're used to. So travel sometimes, yes, it's because you need to meet people in person, because this is establishing a relationship. But it's not necessary that you travel all time. And honestly, when I was young, I loved traveling, but now it's also okay to do a lot of things remotely and to travel every once in a while.
Yeah. Do you have some tips for how to do virtual meetings a bit more emotional, more touchy, more in the way that you feel involved? Because I know that many people say virtual is okay, but I often feel that I can go somewhere, make a coffee, put my camera off. No, I don't care because I don't feel that much how do you say, responsible for being in this call.
Yeah, I think the first of all is the most important thing is to put on the camera, and yeah, because you need to, we are human beings, so although we are more than voice and picture, it is good to see each other, and that's what I always encourage also in my calls. Please, even if you're, yes, you have a bad hair day, well, you know, put a nice background, then it's already flattening a little bit. So.
I tried with my
And therefore, that's for me the first thing, to see each other, because then also, you know, because we are reading mimics, and we can also do this through virtual settings, and it does not replace the personal interaction, not at all. But if you're, you know, if you're familiar with each other, it's also a good and very efficient way to work and to collaborate. It spares you a lot of, you know, unnecessary commute sometimes, or commute during rush hours, or it gives you the possibility to just quickly connect to somebody who is far away from you. But you have to, you know, have a good balance. So the thing is, for me, the first thing, please put on the camera, because that's then already giving this meeting a totally different tone.
That's I think so too. You are an advocate for diversity, and of course, or women's, of course, but you're especially for women and men. What do you think? Do we need to do for also giving the men a special role to driving diversity? Because we often focus just on the women.
Well, I think it's the first step for me is to make the male colleagues involved, so to involve them, saying it's not a women's topic. So the women are the majority on the planet. So that's for sure. So that's the statistics. And then to make them aware. What I learned in my career is that a lot of men don't understand, or are not aware, that women do function a little bit different. As I said, when I make, you know, I organize an event, for instance, and then I ask, I want to have, you know, an expert for topic 1, B, C, and I just, you know, send around a call for participation, call for speaker. Then immediately a lot of men say, I'm the expert, I can do it, no problem. Then, you know, and even if they cannot do it, and if they're not good speakers, but they are just confident, I can do it. And the women, as I said at the beginning, they need this little push. So I need to say, you can do it. I'm totally confident you can do it. Let's rehearse. And you just have to reinforce the field colleagues much more. And that's something where I think men just need to understand that if a woman is saying, oh, I don't know if I can do it, that's not really a doubt as such. It's more a question to reinforce that and saying, you can do it. And this is and the same is true when it comes to applications for open positions. And that's the same thing, because then also you know, there's 10 criteria you need to fulfill. The man would apply if he fulfills, let's say, 5. The woman only applies if all 10 are fully matching. And also there, you know, we have to understand that we have to enforce the women saying it's okay, because you have 5 is already good. So apply, and then the rest is training on the job. So the men should be aware that women are functioning like that, and that it's not kind of really doubt. It's more that they need to be reinforced.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you so much. Maybe my last question, where you could give us maybe three very, very small answers. What are your hacks for looking that good, being that healthy, being that organized?
I think first of all, just stop watching too much TV and just go out and go to nature. And I think use stairs whenever you can. Just don't go on an elevator if, well, okay, in a, well, if you're in New York, you have to go to number 100, not, but if you can walk as much, use as much as possible. And also, if you're in the office, just go to see your colleague. Do not call him or text him. Go there. And because also this is so, use the usual things you would do over day and move as much as possible.
Thank you so much, Christine. It was such a pleasure to have you here. I'm very much looking forward to see you again in person. I'm sure that we can manage this in next year in 2025, and have a wonderful time. So looking forward to seeing you again. Thank you.
Thank you.
And now we proceed with a small break after the break. So stay tuned. We continue with Ellen DeGeneres with a book which will make a change maybe for you, because it's about her way of co-media.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the Skin Comfort Formula online and in stores now.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
So we continue with a book from Ellen DeGeneres. It's on bestseller list. It calls Seriously, I'm Kidding. Ellen DeGeneres' Seriously, I'm Kidding is a light-hearted, quirky, and humorous collection of musings that feels like having a casual conversation with a comedian herself. Known for her observational humor, Ellen delivers a mix of personal anecdotes and some absurd conversation, but also moments of self-reflection. They are unpredictable as they're entertaining. The audiobook, narrated by Ellen, adds an extra layer of charm, making the experience akin to watching her famous monologues from the Ellen DeGeneres Show. While some chapters are more playful than substantive, featuring blank pages or playful coloring book sketches, the book ultimately captures Ellen's essence, her wit, her relatability, and her ability to find humor in everyday life. So, Ellen DeGeneres is a celebrated comedian, actress, and television host. Born in Mid-Year, Louisiana, she had an unorthodox rise to fame, beginning her career performing stand-up comedy in a small clubs before making history as the star of Ellen, the first sitcom to feature an openly gay lead character. Her groundbreaking coming-out episode in 1997 cemented her status as a culture icon and LGBTQ+ advocate. Ellen's humor often reflects her personal philosophy of kindness and lightheartedness, which also underpins her work as a philanthropist and entertainer. Over her career, Alan has won numerous accolades, including multiple Emmys, for her ability to connect with diverse audiences. So the background of the book is it represents Alan's attempt to channel her spontaneous comedic style into book form. Inspired by her daily experiences and her trademark comedic lens, Alan crafted a work that, while no deeply introspective, offers fans a deeper look into her playful and ambivalent world for you. The book's creation stemmed partly from Alan's desire to share her personality by on television, blending humor, random musings, and reflections on life in a format that feels both intimate and accessible. And for me, I think in a world where we think about every word we say, where we point our fingers and everything we see which doesn't fit, Alan presents a book which is full of randomly kidding, spontaneous, humorous things, which is, I say, hey, life is more than just performing in a way of practicing long for that. Life is also should be full of spontaneous things, jumping, dancing, singing, whatever you like to do. Life is also just feeling good, and feeling good doesn't always need to be serious. Feeling good doesn't always need to be something which is hinged to profession. So the essence of the book in 7 key tips is embrace simplicity. Life doesn't always need profound answers. Sometimes a single word like kale can capture the secret of happiness. Be playful. That's what I said. Find humor in mundane situations and don't take life too seriously. Meditation can be simple, even a few moments of quiet reflection, symbolized by a blank page in the book, can be refreshing. Celebrate uniqueness. It's okay to be quirky or unconventional. Authenticity is the key. You are diverse and you are special. Laugh at yourself. Humor can soften life's challenges and help you connect with others. Stay curious. Alan often meanders into random topics, a reminder to explore and enjoy life's little surprises. Spread kindness. Beyond humor, Alan's overarching philosophy is to treat others with compassion. So summarizing with 5 quotes from her, why can't books be published without titles? A reflection of Alan's irreverent humor. Kale, a playful answer to life's profound questions. Portia taught herself how to cook. Now she's down to 3 fingers, but she never gave up. A hilarious, affectionate anecdote about her wife. I think Jesus would be in us weekly polls if we were alive today. Light-hearted commentary on modern celebrity culture. Doesn't this blank page feel better? A cheeky take out on mindfulness and meditation. So Alan, Seriously, I'm Kidding is less a traditional memoir and more an ode to life's humorous and unexpected moments, even in the small things. It's perfect for fans of her comedy who want to feel like they're sitting down for a lighthearted chat with Alan herself. But it's also good for everybody who likes to take life easier. So that brings me to reading from this book. Welcome to my 3rd book. Inside this book, you will find an assortment of wonderful things. Words, pictures, advice, tidbits, morsels, shenanigans, and in some copies for $100 cash. So you might want to buy a few. I don't have enough room on this page to tell you all the reasons why you should buy this book, but I can tell you this, and it's a guarantee. If you buy it, you will feel better, look better, be happier, grow taller, lose weight, get a promotion at work, have shinier hair, and fall madly deeply in love. I had a hard time deciding how to list and acknowledge all the important people in my life. I was going to list people in alphabetical order, but I didn't think that would be fair to Catherine Zeta-Jones. Then I thought, maybe I should list everyone from shortest to tallest or thinnest to heaviest, but that didn't seem right either. So I decided to list everyone from smartest to dumbest. Oh, no, that's not true. This is no particular order. Just because someone is first doesn't mean that they're the most important. It doesn't mean they're not the most important either. I'm grateful for them all. So, in no particular order, I like to thank my mother, my father, my brother, and many other people. Dearest reader, hello. How are you? That's great to hear. Listen, I want to thank you for buying this book. We're about to begin a beautiful journey together, one that is unique and special. I know a lot of you might watch my talk show, but communicating through a book is a different thing than communicating through television. Like on many talk shows, I tell you what's going on in my life and what I'm thinking about each day, but in this book, I'm going to tell you what's going on in my life and what I'm thinking about. You know what? I don't want to waste your time with silly comparison. But I bet a lot of you probably thinking, Alan, why are you writing another book after already proving yourself by penning two widely successful tomes? Well, the truth is, since I wrote my last book, a lot has happened in my life. I got married. I got my own talk show. I started a record label. I became a cover girl. I was Dury. I won an Academy Award. I won the Boston Marathon. I started a compost heap, and I was knighted by the Queen of England. Over the last year or so, since I decided to write this book, people have been asking me how I have the time and why I chose to write it. The truth is, last June, I was driving through a tunnel while I was on the phone with my agent and my sales service party. I said, I just got a great IKEA table for my breakfast nook. My agent thought I said, I've got a great idea for my newest book. By the time we figured out our hilarious misunderstanding, I had signed a whole bunch of papers and I was under contract to write a book. Similarly, a few years ago, I told my agent, I think I got some fudge on my label. And he thought I said, I want to be a judge on American Idol. Since then, I got a new phone and I found out my agent's name is Marvin, not Larvin. But the real truth is, I'm glad I decided to write this book. I love writing. I do feel like I've learned a lot about life and love and other L words since I wrote my last books. And there are things I want to share with the world. As it turns out, writing a book is hard. It is not as hard as mining coal or teaching teenagers to drive. I know that, but it's hard. I didn't think it would be so hard because I go on television every day and talk for an hour, and I usually have plenty to say. Plus, I've already written other books. When I first sit down and write, I stare at the blank page and try to think of some strategies for getting started. When I want a guest on my show to start talking and telling a good story, I ask them a question. So I ask myself a question. When did you first fall in love with Tim McGraw? That didn't get me anywhere, and I quickly realized I shouldn't ask myself questions that are so specific to Faith Hill. So I asked myself a different question. What made you take on the role of Precious? That didn't work either. So then I began to think about you, the readers. Who are you? What are you doing? What are you wearing? I thought it would help to put myself in your shoes for a moment. And always have to think about other people instead of just yourselves. Like, if you want to know what I'm doing right now, I'm driving to work with my top down. The roof of my convertible is up. I'm wearing a beret. It helps me think and it makes me feel French. Okay, is this important? I don't think so. So I'm telling you about my entire life. I've believed in these sentiments. I've believed that true beauty is not related to what color your hair is. True beauty is about who you are as a human being, principles, your moral compass. And then, in 2008, I was finally able to throw all that hogwash. I was named the new face of CoverGirl Cosmetics. Take a bite out of that word. Check out these cheekbones. I'm a beauty queen. The truth is, I still believe that above all things physically, it is more important to be beautiful on the inside, have a big heart and an open mind and a spectacular spleen. Actually, most people's insides are disgusting. Even pretty people have very unattractive insides. Have you ever seen those surgery shows on Discovery? Not pretty at all. So I would like to switch to another chapter to give you some ideas on what she's writing and how she's writing. Let me see. With this, I would like to close then. Oh, she has a chapter which calls meditation. If you want to know what's in a chapter, there's nothing. You see blank pages. Okay. Yes, you're right. Blank pages. The best for meditation. Don't expect always to read something. Yeah, that is Ellen DeGeneres. And don't think that she does it just to make money, because I'm sure that she makes enough money. But I think she is a really comedy by heart. She's not trying to make the best comedy, but she's trying to make just the comedy she feels about. So all this in the books is really, yeah, funny things, or even less funny. It depends on your humor. But what is important to say is, and that's what why I sorted that book out, Ellen DeGeneres makes us, and if we are fans of Ellen or not, thinking about our everyday life, how much humor we should put into this, how much nonsense we should live, how much, yeah, great struggling we should put a humor above it. And if we have sometimes to be a bit less hard with us, laughing just, being nice with us, or just giggling about something which we find childish, and where we think that we are too old to laugh about this. No, you're never too old to jump into water. You're never too old to laugh about childish things. And I wrote a survey about laughing about others if they fall down or something bad happened. Even this, the survey said it's in our neurolinguistical nerves. It's good to laugh. Love is always good. Try to laugh whenever you can. You have heard about loving yoga or loving yoga? Yes. It has nothing to do with just sitting down in the yoga seat, meditating. No, it's just starting loving without any reason. Just doing it as loud as you can and whenever you can. And this brings us to an end of the series of this talk show. And I'm very happy that you're with us here today from India, where I experience a lot of this meditation every day, of this practicing a lot with these small laughs about every day. But first, some of these situations here are Ayurvedic, but are very challenging. I will tell you more next week about this. So don't hesitate to get involved here, and your voice is valued, and together we can make a difference. I'm happy about you being here. Thank you for being part of our community. Until next time, keep shining.